thanks for tuning in. From Municipal World, I'm Susan Gardner. This is the MW Shares podcast, where we share your stories, providing insights into the challenges and opportunities facing local governments and communities just like yours. The MW Shares podcast is powered by Shure Microphones. We recently visited sunny Palm Springs, California, where we have the opportunity to sit down with the city's planning director, Flynn Fagg. Flynn is also an architect and designer, so we were excited to connect with him during Modernism Week to discuss modernist architecture, how the city's policies work to protect this important legacy of built heritage, and its innovative approach to building positive relationships throughout the community. Today, you'll hear Flynn's thoughts on preservation, collaboration with First Nations communities, how neighborhood organization programs can lead to deeper involvement in local government, and economic development plans on the horizon, including a new hockey arena.
Hi, Susan.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
So glad you could connect. I'm out here for Modernism Week and a big event that I'm sure you've got lots of architecture enthusiasts from all over the place coming to visit. Mm-hmm. So I thought it would be nice if we could take this opportunity to chat a little bit about planning and development in the city of Palm Springs.
Certainly.
Why don't we start with a little bit about your background?
Okay. Well, my background is actually in architecture. My degrees are in architecture with an emphasis in urban design. And while I was in graduate school, I became very interested in the planning of cities. And that's what eventually led me to municipal service and working for municipal governments in urban design issues and eventually in all aspects of zoning and historic preservation.
So a great kind of background to bring to the city of Palm Springs.
Yes.
With all the architecture here. Prior to that, you were with...
I was with the city of Las Vegas, and I was the planning director there in Las Vegas. And prior to that, I had worked in the state of Florida for several different communities, also in the area of zoning and preservation. So a diverse background.
Diverse background.
Yeah.
So Palm Springs is kind of unique, maybe compared to Las Vegas, very different approach to architecture.
Yes, very, very different approach to architecture. In Las Vegas, they tend to tear things down and start all over.
It's not really cherished, the history.
Much. Correct. Historic preservation was a bit of a challenge in Las Vegas. While we as the city had made inroads in terms of designating historic neighborhoods, and we had a number of buildings, it was a constant challenge that with the growth and development that occurred there, preservation of older structures just wasn't as cherished as it is here in Palm Springs.
So some interesting architecture coming together in Palm Springs. Some of it predating Palm Springs' existence as a city.
Yeah.
So let's talk about those different things.
Certainly. Palm Springs became a city in 1938. That's when we incorporated. But, you know, the indigenous people had lived here for thousands of years prior to European settlers coming at the turn of the last century. What drew people to the valley, and particularly here to Palm Springs, was the hot springs itself. And so it originally started out as a place of healing. And we still like to think of ourselves as a place where you can come to heal, where you can recharge and take a break from hectic city life. And so many of our residents are escapees from Los Angeles or other urban centers and find it quite peaceful out here in the valley. But speaking of that, again, we didn't really have any major development here until the turn of the last century. Some of our earliest structures that we have preserved are from the 1920s and moving forward from that time. And so you'll see primarily about three different periods of development here in Palm Springs. The very early development that occurred in the 10s and the 20s, And then you see kind of a change to the more Spanish or Mediterranean architectural styles in the 30s and the early 40s. And then with that, beginning in the 1930s, we started to have some of the international style buildings. Albert Frey started with the first one on North Palm Canyon. And then that really kind of consumed us during the 50s and the 60s, and even the late modern period in the 1970s. And so we have this great variety of architectural styles. The emphasis tends to be more, though, on the Mediterranean buildings from the 1930s, and then, of course, the mid-century modern, for which we've become very famous.
Yes. I've had the opportunity to take in some of the tours here, and someone was saying that Palm Springs, perhaps with the exception of Tel Aviv, maybe, has the largest collection of this architecture in the world.
I don't know if we can say we have the largest, but we have the greatest concentration, perhaps, in a very defined area. And so that makes it incredibly convenient for those who are enthusiasts to see quite a broad range of modern buildings here in Palm Springs. You know, again, other communities have a large collection of mid-century modern structures, but not in the concentration, perhaps, that we have. We also have quite a good group of local architects who really made their mark on the city in the 40s, the 50s, and the 60s. And thankfully, we've been able to preserve much of their work, which really creates what we see here today in Palm Springs.
So what kind of interested in the policy, you know, the preservation policy in Palm Springs? What does that look like?
Well, it's interesting that we didn't have any policy prior to 1981. And what happened, as is often the case, is there is one structure that is torn down that just brings the community together. In our case, it was the demolition of the ticket booth at La Plaza Theater right downtown. And it enraged the community to such a degree that our mayor at the time put together a commission to study historic preservation, which ultimately led to the adoption of our historic preservation ordinance that we have in place currently.
So what does that ordinance entail?
What it entails is it has a process for designation of historic structures or heritage structures, and establishes the criteria for which the city can designate structures. But in addition to that, it does something very interesting, is it identifies any structure under the previous ordinance, anything built prior to 1969, which requires a review process so that before you make any significant alterations or demolish a building, it's reviewed by city staff or our historic site board in order to determine if there is any significant characteristics or if it's worthy of preservation. We just recently updated our ordinance last year so that anything built prior to 1978 is subject to review. So that way we have an opportunity to review any changes to structures that may be significant and contribute to the wonderful architectural environment that we have here. So those are the two key things. It's a process for designation and then also a process to look at any structures that may be potentially eligible so that we preserve our existing architectural stock.
So there's always that challenge of balancing preservation against the need for change.
Exactly.
So what does that challenge look like here?
You know, it's interesting in that we've tried to keep the process very friendly in terms of not requiring any lengthy review times and things like that. What is most important is, again, keeping in consideration the rights of property owners versus the greater good for the community in preserving our architectural heritage. And so I think our city council has been very mindful of that, so that review processes are relatively quick, that we're transparent in the criteria that we use to look at historic preservation and whether something is really warrants preservation. And so I think those things have been helpful to balance those two needs.
So what are the key criteria really that you're looking at in determining whether you have some different classes here mm-hmm. of preservation?
And we do. So, you know, there's two basic things that we look at in terms of historic designation of a property. First, there's a set of criteria that we use. Is it associated with someone famous? Was it done by a famous architect or a locally famous architect? Does it relate to historic events here in the community? So those are fairly standard things that groups look at, preservation groups look at in terms of whether or not it qualifies for designation. And then secondly, we look at the integrity of the structure. Does it still look like the way that it did when it was originally constructed or its period of significance? And so those are the two groups of criteria that we use for historic designation. We've divided our local designations into different classes. So the first group will meet the criteria from Group A in terms of being associated with someone who is famous or being of artistic merit or architectural character. But we'll also have the component of integrity, of architectural integrity. So those are our class one structures or landmark structures. The second group may meet the first group of criteria, but don't have the integrity. And we consider those structures of merit, that there's still historic significance to them, but they may not have the same character as when they were originally constructed. And so that's a way that we break down our two different designations of local historic designations here in Palm Springs.
Now we're going to take a short break before getting into the rest of the conversation with Flynn. Each and every month, Municipal World unpacks the issues that impact your community and you. From compelling case studies to new legislation to fresh advice about council staff relations, you'll find insightful articles, exciting features from well-respected columnists like George Cuff and Ashley Whedon, and straightforward facts on real and important matters for local governments. Be in the know and a step ahead of the game. Become a member today. Without further delay, let's jump back into our conversation with Flynn Fagg. So, like any city, you have different neighborhoods that have kind of developed over mm-hmm. the years and different kinds of architecture. You've got one of the docents on the tour was talking about the naming of those neighborhoods and how that was significant from a community building perspective. Mm-hmm. Do you want to speak to that?
One of the programs that the city of Palm Springs embarked on, I'd say probably about 15 to 20 years ago, was actually formalizing a process for neighborhoods to organize. And currently we have approximately 50 organized neighborhoods here within the city of Palm Springs. And a lot of times the names of those neighborhoods is associated with the subdivision. And some of the subdivisions are famous in and of themselves just based on their architecture. For example, the Racquet Club Estates neighborhood organization is one where you have a lot of structures that were designed by William Chrysler, built by the Alexander Construction Company, beautiful examples of mid-century modern design. And so there's a number of neighborhoods that carry the name of the subdivision and is strongly associated with our mid-century period. Racquet Club is one, Sunmore is another one, and there's a handful of others.
I did have the opportunity to do one of the tours in the Racquet Club Estates.
Yes.
And many of those people had opened up their homes, mm-hmm. You know, to allow the tour to go through.
Yes.
And we actually, when we were walking, I was taking pictures of one of the homes and somebody actually came out and said, oh, do you want to come inside and take some pictures? So people are very proud. And I got the sense when we were going through people's homes, I mean, there's a real sense of pride in those communities about what they have and how they've taken care of those neighborhoods.
There really is. And I would say that to a certain degree, Modernism Week has helped to further that sense of community. People are very proud of their homes. They're proud of restoring their homes, and especially the period details of the home. And so it's interesting that many people will open up their homes to tours during Modernism Week. Thousands of people will go through their house. And again, they're just happy to be part of this community and to have something that contributes to the sense of what Palm Springs is.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And so those neighborhoods, I think what the docent had said was something around the fact that the program was created to give people something to something positive for people to kind of rally around in a neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
So as opposed to more negative approaches, a different approach where it's around crime prevention or
yes.
crime reporting and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it really is. Our neighborhood organizations are a valuable tool for the city in terms of you have a group of people who are very proud of their neighborhood and want to make sure that it maintains those characteristics. And so the neighborhood organizations are very involved with not only city council, but our planning commission and other groups to make sure that we preserve that character. They also look for things such as sidewalk improvements, you know, what could make their communities more walkable or bikeable, things like that. So like you say, it's not just about crime, but rather looking at other improvements that would make the neighborhood much more livable a place that we all want to live.
So how does that interface between the neighborhood groups and council, for example? How does that
We have a separate organization that is basically made up of members of the individual neighborhood groups. They have a chair, a vice chair, and a council, if you will. And it's through that council that they forward any recommendations or suggestions to the city. And so it functions as kind of a subset of our other city boards and commissions. And it gives those residents more or less a direct line to the city council and to city staff. We do have a city staff member who is charged with being the coordinator for that group. And so they are directly responsible with assisting the neighborhood organizations with their meetings, putting out announcements, etc.
So let's talk about new developments. We've talked a little bit about preservation and so on. You have height restrictions here.
Correct.
We notice it. It's lovely because you've got the great view of the mountains all around and it's pretty much unobstructed. What does your height restriction ordinance look like?
Well, here in Palm Springs, we're a very low-rise city, and it was a bit unusual to me, having come from other places, to see how restrictive Palm Springs is. For example, in our single-family residential neighborhoods, houses are limited to one story in height, and you typically don't find that in other communities. And it's largely out of that concern for views and privacy that we maintain a one-story height limit in our residential neighborhoods. In our commercial districts, we are typically limited to two stories and 30 feet in height, although there are certain areas where greater height is permissible. But overall, it is fairly restrictive in terms of height, which is something that is a unique characteristic of this community. We want to maintain that relationship that we have with the mountains that surround us. And so views of those mountains is very important to residents.
And you mentioned the privacy factor.
Mm-hmm.
Palm Springs, of course, has a rich history with the Hollywood stars having their homes here. And, for folks who are listening who don't know, I was surprised to see how many of the homes, even in normal neighborhoods, are kind of gated off at the front and you really don't see much of the home. Is that usual not to have those kinds of setbacks from the property and so on?
It isn't necessarily unusual. Palm Springs, like other communities, has limitations on wall height at the perimeter of the property. And just like any other community, our wall height limitation is 6 feet. There is a restriction in terms of how close that wall can be to the front property line, so it's no different than any other community. What you see more often in Palm Springs is, rather than walls, we tend to have vegetation, which is used for privacy, and ficus hedges are typically what we see. That has become an issue from some neighbors, where ficus hedges are allowed to grow quite tall, and there's a concern about shading and obstructing other people's views. We haven't gotten to the point where we regulate the height of vegetation, but who knows, we might get there at some point in time. But again, it's done primarily through vegetation is how we screen off yards.
So there's also a little bit different, different than many places, Palm Springs and Canada, we say First Nations, but First Peoples. There's a checkerboard.
Exactly.
I want to talk about that.
Certainly. We have a very unique relationship with the First Nations here in terms of the fact that the city of Palm Springs overlaps what is essentially an Indian reservation. How it came to be is in the 1870s, as the government was encouraging the development of railroad lines, and in particular here in the Coachella Valley, they gave every other odd-numbered section of land to the railroad, and then eventually gave every even-numbered section of land to our First Nation tribes. And so what we have is, as you've described, a checkerboard pattern of ownership. What becomes unique and in some cases challenging is that the boundaries of the city of Palm Springs overlap with the tribal boundaries. And we have agreements with our local tribe in terms of how land use regulations apply to tribal land. What's also unique is that the tribe is able to either lease or in certain cases sell land to non-tribal members. And so we will have neighborhoods here in Palm Springs, which are on land that is within the boundaries of the reservation, but is fee land, meaning that the resident of the land actually owns the parcel of property, even though it's within the boundaries of the reservation.
So interesting.
it's a challenge to understand that. Yeah. It's a challenge to administer that. But it does require us to work quite closely with the tribal government on issues of land use.
So what does that collaboration look like? Do you have formalized mechanisms in place?
Yes, we do. We have formalized agreements in terms of how we administer land use. Where the land is still under the jurisdiction of the tribe gives the city the opportunity to comment on any new development applications. And so that process has been one that is generally effective. The city also provides services to lands within the boundaries of the reservation in terms of police protection, fire protection, street services, etc. And so we have agreements that help to define the relationship between the city and the tribe.
Okay. Pausing for a moment. I had a thought. I wanted to ask you about something. There's a new development happening in the downtown. Mm-hmm. And being from Canada, we were kind of intrigued to see here in the desert that a hockey arena. Is that right?
Yes. We're probably not as big a fans of hockey here as you are in Canada, but we do have a minor league team, which is currently considering an arena location here in Palm Springs. It's on land that is owned directly by the tribe, and so the tribe is the one who has been instrumental in bringing the developer to construct the arena and also working in negotiations with the minor league team. The idea is that the minor league team will use the arena, but they'll also make it available for concert performances and so on. So kind of interesting.
It is interesting.
Not a sport that you would expect to see here in the desert, but hopefully it will be something that will be a positive aspect for residents and visitors here to our community.
And I'm sure Canadian visitors in particular will be very excited to come to the games there.
Yeah. You know, in my condominium complex, we have winter visitors from Manitoba, Saskatchewan, BC, Alberta. So
and we've
all of the Western provinces are here.
And we've met a lot of fellow Canadians from all parts of Canada on our tours this week. So it's wonderful to be here in Palm Springs.
Yeah. You're
so
in
warm.
Good company during this time of the year.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Flynn. It's been a pleasure chatting with you.
Well, thank you, Susan. I appreciate it.
If you're interested in learning more about any of the planning initiatives we discussed in today's episode, you can find lots of information on the city's website, www.palmspringsca.gov. And you can find out more about Modernism Week at modernismweek.com. I want to thank Flynn Fagg for taking the time to sit down and chat with us, and thank you for listening to the MW Shares podcast. Discover new episodes every Wednesday on Apple and Google Podcasts, or find us on our website, municipalworld.com. We'd like to hear your ideas. If you have a topic you'd like to see covered in a future episode, simply drop us an email at stories@municipalworld.com. Also, don't forget to rate, comment, and subscribe. I'm Susan Gardner for Municipal World, and we'll be back with more stories next week.